And now on Manx Radio, as part of today's special Tynwald Day programmes, we take a look at the 1 year in modern times when the Tynwald ceremony was cancelled altogether, 1918. The events of that July are vividly recorded in the autobiography of Samuel Norris, an MHK and campaigner for social justice. Charles Gard now explains the background and reads an extract from the book.
During the First World War, the relationship between the island's all-powerful governor, Lord Raglan, and the House of Keys deteriorated badly. At the time, there was no income tax on the Isle of Man, but there were those who wanted it introduced, seeing taxing income as a fairer way of raising revenue rather than taxing food, which even the poorest had to pay. But at this time, the spending of Manx tax monies was controlled by Whitehall, and until this was changed, the Keys said that they would refuse to introduce income tax. There was a standoff, and the governor then announced that the subsidy on a standard loaf of bread was to be scrapped, and that the ninepenny loaf might go up to a shilling. It was this simple threat which would have affected many people on the island, which led to the dramatic events culminating in the cancellation of Tynwald Day in 1918. Samuel Norris takes up the story. The governor's announcement that the ninepenny loaf was to be stopped caused great consternation and resentment amongst all classes throughout the island. Public meetings of protest were immediately organised by representatives of trade union organisations, the newly formed branches of the Workers' Union taking a leading part. Open-air meetings held at Ramsey, Peel and Rushen were largely attended and culminated in a united monster demonstration on the shore at Broadway in Douglas on the Sunday afternoon. When the master bakers announced that, as from Monday the 1st of July, the £4 loaf would be sold at 1 shilling, Lord Raglan issued a proclamation, fixing the maximum price at 10p. The bakers promptly countered this by deciding that they would close down their bakehouses. They could not produce bread at a profit, they said, under 1 shilling unless subsidised. The operative bakers joined their masters and refused to bake until the subsidy was restored. The governor had already adjourned a Tynwald sitting to meet at St John's on Friday the 5th for the annual promulgation of laws. That Tynwald ceremony never took place. As governor of the island, Lord Raglan now held in himself all the executive government. He was without any responsible constituted insular advisers. He telegraphed the Home Office several times during the next 48 hours for guidance and sanction to act, but all he received was a reply to keep the Home Office informed of developments. Things got rapidly worse. Immediately after the failure of the legislature on the Tuesday to make financial provision for the ninepenny loaf, the trade union leaders decided to call a strike of all organised labour to begin the next night. Housewives and the public at large were advised to get in stocks of bread and flour and food, and this led to a run on food shops, and was not, as events proved, useless advice. On Thursday morning, July the 4th, a general strike was in operation against the government and the legislature. The minimum demand was the restoration of the subsidised ninepenny loaf and an undertaking that there should be no more increased taxation of food. All transport was stopped. The seamen and firemen refused to start the only daily passenger steamer from Douglas to Liverpool. Trains, trams, electric cars, horse and motor vehicles carrying passengers or goods were stopped. A railway engine, which had steam up, apparently to be ready to leave Douglas at short notice, had its fires drawn from under the boilers by strikers. The Douglas gasworks were closed. there was then no public electric light or power in the Isle of Man, and the serious effect of this step was at once manifest. Very few shops and workshops, whether employing union or non-union labour, opened their doors. Those who did were visited, as the morning wore on, by increasing numbers of young men and women who forcibly ejected the workers and closed the doors. No distinction was made between chain stores or individually managed businesses. Newspaper offices and wartime manufactories, skilled and unskilled trades, all joined with the rest. Even the selling of English newspapers and tobacco was suspended. A Peel fishing boat, landing herrings, was permitted by the strike leaders as a special favour to sell the fish to the poor at 50 for a shilling. The extent and success of the close down astonished even its organisers. This was not merely a general strike of labour. It was a public demonstration of discontent against the government of the island. People of all classes were glad to take this opportunity of giving some expression to their pent-up resentment at failure and neglect. Allied to which was also the knowledge that a dear loaf must necessitate higher wages in many shops which were being kept going during the war at a loss. And so employers, almost without exception, were in sympathy and lent their active cooperation in the strike. Those responsible for calling the strike carried out their part of the undertaking with calmness, good temper and firmness, and presented their terms of settlement to the governor. Lord Raglan, however, was not of the type to surrender his position without a fight. As the day wore on, the crowds in the streets of Douglas became bigger, and reports began to be circulated of incidents by gangs of strikers which might lead to lawlessness, looting and rioting. Lord Raglan was appealed to and, by order, shut down all public houses. Licensed grocers were already closed. The cinemas decided not to open. The most critical incident during the bread strike, which led to a conflict with the police, arose during an assault on Captain Mockton, one of the members of the House of Keys, by a number of enraged women. He carried on business as a coal dealer in his constituency on the North Quay, alongside the harbour. His record in Tynwald had been no worse, perhaps, than that of some of his colleagues, but his breezy bluntness sometimes was taken for lack of sympathy. When he said that oatmeal, cooked overnight, made a better breakfast than bought bread, and that mothers had lost the art of baking bread, the women living around him in old tenement houses, having no facilities for proper cooking, let alone baking, resented this as a personal reflection. He was seen approaching his coal yard on the morning of the strike, obviously with the intention of opening for business, and he was followed by a growing crowd of deterrents. At his destination, the crowd was augmented by many women and by several members of the police force. The captain showed no spirit of compromise and ignored all demands to close down. During the wordy warfare which followed, old boots and then stones were thrown through the office windows, every pane of glass and then the entire framework was smashed to splinters. The office furniture was damaged. Captain Mockton stood his ground in spite of pleas by the police to close the yard down. And then he found that neither he nor they could close it from the surging crowd. He was bleeding in the face and had an injury to his head. Some of the splinters had struck him. Someone called out, "Put him in the harbour!" And the crowd immediately surged towards him with the evident desire to accomplish that end. The police resistance was being overborne when, at a critical moment, the responsible strike leaders who had been sent for appeared in the very nick of time and, by counsels of moderation and in their own interests, secured police escort of the captain to the police station for safety. Public meetings, with ever-increasing crowds of listeners, were held in different parts of the town by the strike leaders who explained the progress of events. The steamer from Liverpool had been allowed to sail for Douglas on the understanding that the men would not work the return passage till the strike was over. She brought 500 visitors. And now the visitors who were already on the island and who wanted to go home at the weekend began to take part in the proceedings. They held public meetings and sent deputations to interview the governor. He urged them to make their appeal to the strike leaders. Those leaders were courteous but adamant. The only person who could get them home was the governor by conceding the ninepenny loaf. The visitors were sympathetic but insisted that something must be done and done soon. They wired individually to their members of parliament to see the Home Secretary. The Tynwald ceremony became impossible because there was no transport to carry anyone to St John's except by leave of the strike committee. Lord Raglan acknowledged the failure of the government by cancelling the Tynwald ceremony and the meeting of the legislature at St John's. He was afraid of another demonstration there and saw that something else might happen. In the two previous years, demonstrations at Tynwald. In this third year, the meeting cancelled by the governor in desperation. This was without parallel in its history of 1,000 years. Lord Raglan had now, in truth, reason to act for himself and act swiftly. Determination and a common cause had welded all classes together in a fight against the insular government. The spectre of a bread famine was appearing. Thursday afternoon had been usually a shopkeeper's holiday, and Tynwald Day was always a national holiday on pay. So far the strikers had made provision, but not beyond. There was no bread in the shops and no yeast for housewives to bake their own. Frayed tempers and anxious looks were showing themselves. If the workers did not get back to work on Saturday, what would happen? All employers, so far, would pay full wages, but they expected to resume work and see their employees back for their week's wages on Saturday morning. Neither the governor nor the strike leaders could guarantee what must eventuate. It might be rioting and wholesale pillaging, or it might be a partial resumption of work and resentment at undeserved defeat. Lord Raglan had finally offered the tenpence halfpenny loaf. The strikers replied, not even a ninepence halfpenny. He sent for his legislative councillors on the Friday morning. He had seen and heard the visitors' deputation, and, to a suggestion that he should telegraph to the government to send a warship to take them all home, his only reply was that he could not get them to send even an answer to telegrams already sent. At 3 o'clock on the Friday afternoon, the governor capitulated. He caused a notice to be posted outside government office in Douglas as follows. Arrangements have been made for the immediate resumption of the ninepenny loaf. The Lieutenant Governor trusts that business will be resumed as early as possible and that no person will be victimised for participating in the strike. Joy bells rang throughout the island that night. The cinemas overflowed, the steamer service was resumed, and visitors got away in time to catch their home trains on the mainland. It was a great victory for democracy in the Isle of Man, and it is from this day that unskilled labour found out the power of organisation. Lord Raglan left the island the next morning by steamer.
That extract from Samuel Norris's Manx Memories and Movements was read by Charles Gard.